Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm set to get it rolling. The calm after the storm. Super Bowl 53 last night, right here on KOAL, actually. I love the buildup that we had of the big game this year. We had great guests on the show Friday. We carried some of that over into Saturday, and then, of course, we had the football game for you last night. A lot of people talking about how this game was boring, didn't live up to the hype, yada, yada, yada. Listen, to me, I thought this was a fascinating Super Bowl. I thought it was extremely entertaining, and I don't have to say this because if you listen to the show enough, you know my take. I love defense, right? I love games. You give me an NBA game that's 83-79, I love it. I'm all for it. You give me a baseball game that's 1-0, I love it. Every now and then, I like good offensive performances in games. High-scoring games don't necessarily mean that the defense was bad. You know, we go back to the Rams-Chiefs game. Both defenses had big plays and scored points. Last night, it was a chess match of a football game. It was masterful defensively on both sides. And we had talked about this matchup going into it. It's McVay versus Josh McDaniels. Okay, it's Belichick versus Wade Phillips. That's what the matchup of the Super Bowl was. And I thought Wade Phillips played tit for tat with Bill Belichick because typically, and the Patriots, they scored 13, they scored 10 points in this game. I mean, the last field goal, foregone conclusion, final score of this game was going to be 10-3 if New England picked up another inch, right? So the Rams defense, for the most part, gave up 10 points in this game last night. You should never lose a game with the style of offense the Rams play, with the weapons the Rams have offensively, if you're only giving up 10 points. So I thought Wade Phillips was masterful. I thought Bill Belichick was masterful. Okay, that's chess. Everyone plays checkers, but Bill Belichick, Wade Phillips, those guys play chess. Bronco fans know what I'm talking about because we saw this in the Super Bowl before. Right? We saw Von Miller and the Broncos bring pressure around the edge and limit Tom Brady. Now, at times this year, the Rams have looked kind of blah offensively. They looked terrible against the Bears at Soldier Field. Cold weather had a little bit to do with that. It was freezing in that game. And I kept going back to the Detroit Lions game in which the Lions pretty much rendered the play action worthless. And I thought New England did that again last night. So to me, again, masterful game. I don't know why people were bored by this. It was 3-3 with 10 minutes to play in the game. It's a tied ball game in the Super Bowl. Just because it's not 30-30 doesn't mean it was a poorly played game. I thought the Rams did enough to throw Tom Brady off. Tom Brady did not win this Super Bowl for New England. He may have worked Julian Edelman, and we'll talk more about this in just a bit, because while it's not the most impressive win for New England, and I don't even think it's the most unlikely win, but how they did it, it was pretty special last night. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But again, I don't think it was boring. I thought it was masterful. I thought it was a very entertaining game. We saw defensive masterpieces on display last night. And typically when you give someone like Bill Belichick 2 weeks, he's going to get the best of you. And that's what happened last night. We'll talk a little bit more about Super Bowl 53 in just a bit. On the NBA, the Anthony Davis trade watch, we're down to the final 3 days before the trade deadline, and things seem to be heating up as far as a possible deal. Anthony Davis on his way out of New Orleans, and I guess possibly now on his way to LA. Here's the trade that is being discussed, and this was reported by Brad Turner of the Los Angeles Times. This is a big one here. The Lakers would send Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson, Michael Beasley, and two first-round picks to New Orleans in exchange for Anthony Davis and Solomon Hill. And then the Lakers would use their stretch provision on Hill. To me, you're giving up six, seven, eight players, counting the two draft picks. You're giving up eight players to acquire Anthony Davis. And so the question is, would this be smart for them? Without question, yes, you do it. This is a team that is not in the playoffs as we speak. You give up everything outside of LeBron James to acquire Anthony Davis. There are a few days for this trade to be worked out because the deadline is not until February 7th, which is Thursday, so we're still a couple of days away. I will say this much. The Lakers have to make this trade now. And the reason why the Lakers have to make this deal is because Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, these are your three young core. They now know that they are in trade rumors. And that's the really, I guess, bad part about social media in today's game. It affects these guys. I don't care what they say. It affects them. And these are three young guys that thought they would have an opportunity to grow together with LeBron James. It's not going to happen now. I mean, that is going to be in the back of their mind. With this breaking, and whoever is leaking this sort of information from the Laker organization, they need to get this deal done. To me, Anthony Davis is worth every penny of it. I think he may be the best basketball player in the world right now. But now, according to reports, he would prefer the Lakers, Clippers, Knicks, or Bucks. Just looking at it, Clippers, they don't have the resources. They don't have the pieces. The Knicks, they just gave up Porzingis and the deal with Dallas. That's not going to happen. Milwaukee, what do they have as far as not gutting a team that is going to compete in the Eastern Conference to get to the NBA Finals? So if, in fact, Anthony Davis is going to be moved over the next 3 or 4 days, it would have to be to LA. And I don't know that you're going to get a better offer anyway. Because Boston can't make a trade until this offseason. We've talked about why. Because of the rookie contract provision. They can't have two guys that are on the extended rookie deal on their roster. They have Kyrie Irving. Boston's offer is not going to trump what the Lakers are offering right here. Lonzo Ball is a bona fide all-star. Kyle Kuzma, you fans, I know he's got a good following here in the state of Utah. This guy's going to be a 19 to 20 point a night scorer. Brandon Ingram, he's got versatility. He's 6'10". You're going to throw in two first-round draft picks. You're going to throw in a bunch of players on one-year deals. I don't know that New Orleans is going to get a better offer than this. And so I think the Pelicans would be wise to take it. Lakers are giving up a ton here. Eight players to acquire the rights to Anthony Davis. Let's jump back over to the NFL with Super Bowl 53 now behind us. The New England Patriots, they'll be looking for a new defensive coordinator. Brian Flores already had a press conference, and he is now the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins. The team made this announcement today. General manager Chris Greer, in charge of his first coaching search, sought someone with similar beliefs. That's what he was apparently looking for. Flores had a walk-off shot again last night. I was talking about Bill Belichick and how great he was. Flores had a lot to do with that. He's only 37 years old. Terrific defensive coordinator. Marks the second consecutive year now that the Patriots have lost their defensive coordinator. As far as a coaching change goes, remember Matt Patricia was the DC last year for New England. And now Flores, the first full-time minority coach in franchise history for the Miami Dolphins. One of four minority coaches currently in the NFL. He's replacing Adam Gase, who was fired on December 31st. That was not the only coaching hire made official today. This one baffles me a little bit. Flores, I get. Zach Taylor was named the 10th head coach in Cincinnati Bengals history today, and I'm still scratching my head on this one. They could not hire him until the Rams were out of the playoffs. Season came to an end last night. Taylor's only 35 years old, second youngest coach in the league, behind his former boss, Sean McVay. Taylor, again, only the 10th head coach in Bengals history. And this is why I said I would take the Bengals job. The Bengals were loyal to Marvin Lewis. You know they have patience. Okay, so I don't know that it's a bad spot for Taylor to go. I just question the hire for Cincinnati. And I'm not one of those people that think you have to be of a certain age to be a head coach. I praised the Rams when they hired Sean McVay. I thought it was a terrific hire. But Sean McVay had experience. He had a wealth of experience and was of a football pedigree. Taylor, on the flip side, he's only been with the Rams since 2017. He was an assistant wide receivers coach before his promotion to quarterbacks coach. He's not even a coordinator. He spent 1 year in the college ranks as an offensive coordinator and a quarterbacks coach, and that was at Cincinnati. He was an assistant with the Dolphins for three seasons, an interim offensive coordinator at the end of the 2015 season. I just don't know if, again, I don't know if the experience is there. I praise the hire of Matt LaFleur for Green Bay as head coach because Matt LaFleur had a track record, right? Matt Ryan had an MVP season when Matt LaFleur was his quarterback's coach. Jared Goff made the biggest jump of his career, hands down. Well, maybe the biggest jump that we've ever seen from a top pick between his rookie and sophomore season. He was dreadful his rookie year. Matt LaFleur oversaw that last season for Jared Goff. And then he moved on to Tennessee as an offensive coordinator. And so to me, you know, there was experience there for Matt LaFleur. I just feel like everyone is trying to find the next Sean McVay. I think the Dolphins knock it out of the park. The Bengals are starting a new era. And if they're going to give Zach Taylor 10, 15 years like they gave Marvin Lewis, look, you got a guy that you're going to be able to mold and grow because he's only 35 years old. I just think it's a dramatic shift. And I just don't know if this is really going to be the right call for the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm rooting for Zach Taylor. I don't know if he's ready to be a head coach in the league, but we shall see. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front coming up. We got a lot of local sports on the show today as well. We'll give you the recap of everything that happened over the weekend. We did have some exciting basketball for USU Eastern and Emory High, and we'll also play an interview from the Emory High School game a little bit later on as Kyler Wilstead was dynamic. So that's all coming up, plus a recap of Super Bowl 53. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and it's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Utah High School Activities Association will be determining seeds into state tournaments differently in the coming years for the traditional team sports of baseball, basketball, football, lacrosse, soccer, softball, and volleyball. In a meeting on January 24th, the UHSAA Board of Trustees ratified a unanimous executive committee directive to move to a ratings percentage index, also known as RPI, to seed state tournaments in the traditional team sports, while simultaneously inviting every program in team sports to the postseason. The new seeding tournament format will commence with the 2019 through 21 alignment, beginning in the fall of the 2019 season for all six classifications. The RPI score will be operated by Max Preps, and it will be based on three distinct categories. 40% of the score will be based off of a team's winning percentage, 40% will be based off of an opponent's winning percentage, and 20% will be based off an opponent's winning percentage. The ALF algorithm will then create an index score that can be ranked to determine a state tournament field. Several Western states are currently utilizing the RPI system to seed state tournaments, including neighboring states like Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, and Washington. Rob Cuff, the executive director of the Utah High School Activities Association, said the move to the RPI was decided upon after looking at options to more accurately seed state tournaments. Cross country, tennis, track and field, and wrestling will use a traditional region qualifying tournament, while golf, drill, and swimming will use different methods to qualify teams for state competitions. Every tournament will be conducted similarly, with the potential addition of a round to allow for the increase in team participants. You can find more on this story by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to high school basketball. This past Friday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the Emory Sport and Boys basketball team ended a two-game losing skid with an impressive victory over the North Sampete Hawks 85-63. In this contest, the Spartans were led by senior Brody Tuttle. He poured in a game-high 26 points, 21 of which came from beyond the three-point line. Junior Kyler Wilstead finished with 19 points, and senior Kyson Stilson scored 17. Emory is now 5-5 in region play, and this week they'll wrap up the regular season. Action will resume on Wednesday with a road trip to Grand to take on the Red Devils, and on Friday, Emory will take on San Juan. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll talk more about the Emory Spartan basketball team in the coming days. We move over to junior college athletics, and on Saturday night, the USU Eastern men's basketball team ended a three-game losing skid with a monumental victory over Snow College, 56-55 on the road in Ephraim. USU Eastern trailed by as many as eight in the game, but battled back in the second half. Snow College had an opportunity to win the contest on the final possession of the game, but center Truman Moore was swatted away at the rim by USU Eastern's Wojtek Rusik. The win moves USU Eastern to 4-3 and puts them right in the thick of things for the number one seed in the Scenic West Athletic Conference. Throughout the game, the Eagles were led by sophomore Augie Pantovic. He scored 15 points, knocking down 6 of 9 shots from the field. And Tanner Nygren chipped in with 12. He finished 4 of 9 from the field. USU Eastern will now travel on the road to take on CSI this Thursday in Twin Falls. And we end by looking at the USU Eastern women's basketball team. Though a valiant effort, they came up short this past Saturday, falling to Snow College 73-63. The loss is the fourth in the last five games for the Lady Eagles, who now sit 3-5 overall in conference play. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the USU Eastern basketball teams throughout the week. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Going to be recapping Super Bowl 53 on the show. I'll tell you, I had so much fun last week gearing up for this game. Some of the guests that we added to the show, especially on Friday, got to talk to a couple of Patriot players, including James White and Brian Hoyer. And I really thought James White was going to have a big impact on the Super Bowl if the Patriots were going to win. I was wrong on that. I mean, he was basically non-existent in this game. Tom Brady loves to throw to running backs into the flats out of the backfield. Didn't happen. I think James White had one catch yesterday. That was it. And so they found another way to get it done. We talked during the intro to the show, the masterful job. It was won defensively. It was not anything that Tom Brady did or did not do in this game. The offense found a little bit of rhythm late in the contest. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the Rams' defense was just worn out. I mean, the Rams' offense was so bad yesterday. Quick three and outs. I believe they punted on their first eight possessions of the game, if I'm not mistaken. So the defense was on the field for an awful long time, and that's when New England finally started having some success down the stretch. It's wrong to pick against the Patriots. I've said this multiple times on the show, and I've gone back on this for the last like 8 years since the show has been on. Always have a hard time picking against this team in the Super Bowl. And I don't really know where to put this sixth win in regards to the whole dynasty and the legacy, because now you're talking about a team that's 6-3 in the Super Bowl with Belichick and Brady at the helm. So it's remarkable. This Ram team wasn't nearly as good as the greatest show on turf team back in 2002 when the Patriots beat them. So I'm not going to say it's the most surprising win, because it's not. Masterful? Yeah, I think when you take a look at what they took away, I mean, even the greatest show on turf Rams had success offensively. This Ram team, and we've mirrored those numbers throughout the entire year. We've compared, you know, what Goff was able to do at the beginning of the season to what Kurt Warner was able to do. Todd Gurley to Marshall Faulk. Robert Woods, who may be the most complete wide receiver in the NFL, and Brandon Cooks, who was a burner. And the Rams' tight ends were non-existent yesterday as well. Gerald Everett, Tyler Higbee did not have a single catch. So I think when you compare the two games, going back to 2002 and comparing this year's, I think this was a perfect game defensively for the Patriots. I don't think it could have been any better. In fact, the only 3 points that the Rams scored, it's the first time we've seen a field goal beyond 51 yards in the Super Bowl in like 15 years. So the Rams had to rely on an injured Greg Zuerlein to boot their only field goal. So I thought the Patriots were absolutely wonderful defensively in this game. Offensively, again, the Rams took a lot of things away from New England. Sony Michel averaging 5.5 yards per carry, scoring the game's only touchdown. Obviously, that was big. And Julian Edelman, the Super Bowl MVP, had 10 catches for 141 yards. I think even Gronk's numbers are a little bit inflated. He had one huge catch that set up the only play in the red zone in this game. That was obviously big. Outside of that, I didn't think Gronk played a huge factor in this game either. I thought the Rams did a good job of taking him away, but it was Julian Edelman. Over 14 yards per catch in this game that was huge for New England. As long as Bill Belichick is patrolling the sidelines, I have to believe the New England Patriots are going to be in contention for a Super Bowl year in and year out. I thought it was over last year after they lost to Philly. I thought it was time to turn the page. Brady's approaching 40 years old. He can't move in, you know, he can't get out of the pocket. We know that. Wade Phillips showcased that. He proved that when he was with the Broncos. You get this guy out of the pocket, and he looks mortal, right? And so I was asked today, I went on Steve Bordstein, who's a great friend of mine and a great friend of the show. I went on his show today, and I was asked about the Patriots dynasty moving forward. How much longer can they keep it up? And I think I have to kind of turn the page in the Tom Brady book. Because as long as Bill Belichick is patrolling the sidelines, and as long as the Patriots continue to find the pieces to fit their puzzle, they're going to be in contention. This goes beyond Brady, I think, at this stage. And Bronco fans will understand where I'm coming from with this. Peyton Manning won one Super Bowl in Denver, well past his prime. If I'm not mistaken, he had a negative touchdown to interception ratio in the postseason that year. They won it defensively. And that's how the Patriots won the Super Bowl. They won it defensively. And they found ways throughout the postseason. You got to go beyond the Super Bowl. You got to take a look at how they beat the Chargers. As I've said it before, the Chargers have more talent on their roster, 1 through 53. I wholeheartedly believe that. You have to look at how they beat Kansas City. It was completely different. They beat the Chargers in a completely different way that they beat Kansas City, in a completely different way that they beat the Rams. That's coaching. That's putting your players in the right situation. It's playing disciplined football. I think it's really that simple. And so you take a look at the questions surrounding the Patriots going into the offseason as to how much longer can they keep this dynasty rolling. Biggest question of the offseason, Rob Gronkowski. Will he call it a career? Is he going to hang it up? And right off the bat, I can tell you it does not matter. This team can win, and they will win without Gronkowski. They've done it before. They beat the Atlanta Falcons without Rob Gronkowski. In fact, he was almost a casualty of this roster in the offseason. From all reports, there was a done deal, a deal in place that was going to send him to Detroit. They can and they will win without Rob Gronkowski. And I don't even know if the ball's in his court anymore, because he has a cap hit of $12 million in 2019. And as great as he is, as great of a blocker as he was in the Super Bowl, as great of a blocker as he was throughout the postseason, that's a huge cap hit. And in the NFL, when you have a hard cap, you have to have cap casualties. And to me, Gronk would be one of those, because they can win without him. So if he does elect to come back, he's either going to have to rework his contract, take a lower cap hit, or he's not going to be the one making the decision. To me, it's an easy one. They don't need him to win. I don't believe that they need Gronk to be successful next season. I think that's an easy question there. Next would be hiring a defensive coordinator. And as we talked about during the intro to the show, this would be the second consecutive year that Belichick will have to find a new defensive coordinator after Matt Patricia left for Detroit last year, and now Brian Flores on his way to Miami. There's rumors already that Greg Schiano may take over. Brett Bielema could be another one, current assistant to the coaching staff already. That would make a lot of sense. There's people in place to take this particular spot, and I think whoever gets it next would probably be a safe bet to be there for the next couple of years. Brian Flores is a hot name. Brian Flores is not Zach Taylor from L.A. Brian Flores has been around the block. He's earned his stripes. To me, there's no question that he was going to be gone at the end of the season if New England even got back to the postseason. So, like I said, rumors could be Greg Schiano. That's a guy that has some head coaching experience in the NFL. Don't forget he had that stint with Tampa Bay. That would be next on the list for New England. And like the answer to Gronk, I don't think it matters. I really don't, because Bill Belichick is a defensive-minded coach, and I'm amazed at how people forget this. That this guy won two Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator. He's a defensive-minded coach. Next defensive coordinator would be the next question for New England. Extension for Tom Brady. He's set to enter the final year of his contract. In the past, the team and Tom Brady have worked out a contract extension when there were 2 years remaining on the deal. It's not the case this go-around. But it would be wise for the Patriots to extend him. He's currently set to count $27 million against the cap. That's a hit that the Patriots could lower significantly if they give him an extension. And so again, you got to think dollars and cents because there's a hard cap in the NFL. And in order to continue the success, you have to have flexibility. Rework Tom Brady's deal, rework Gronk's deal, or just get rid of Gronk altogether. Brady's not going anywhere. They're definitely going to figure this out. He's going to get another extension. It would probably be somewhere around the three-year mark. Expect him to play till he's 42, 43 years old. Here's the real question for New England, and it's something that they have not addressed since trading Jimmy Garoppolo last season. Who's your next quarterback? Because it's not Brian Hoyer. Loved talking to Hoyer on the show last week. Got a wealth of experience in the NFL, been a starter in this league, but he's not next in line. And Bill Belichick had his guy in Jimmy Garoppolo. He doesn't have that now. Plenty of draft picks. They own their own first-round pick. They own a pair of second-round selections and three third-round selections, two that are projected to be the compensatory picks. So if you want to maneuver around the draft board in April, New England could do that, and they would be wise to find their quarterback right now because that thought is going to come up sooner than later. But I think the most significant question of all, and this goes beyond the quarterback because Brady is going to be there for the next couple of years barring a massive injury, free agents. Because when you win a Super Bowl or you get to a Super Bowl, when you have success, players who you have under contract, under market value, are going to get paid and they're going to be paid handsomely. Trey Flowers, he is going to cash in. He put up great numbers throughout the entire season, had 8 sacks in the regular season, had a pair of sacks in the Super Bowl last night, and he was constantly in Jared Goff's face. He is underrated, and he is going to get paid. He's not going to get paid Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, Von Miller money, but he's going to get paid. He's 25 years old, and there are two positions in the NFL right now that are the highest paid. Your quarterback, and again, we were just talking about Brady getting the $27 million, and a pass rush. Those are the two highest paid positions in the NFL right now. Again, look at Von Miller, look at Khalil Mack, look at Aaron Donald. He's going to get paid. The Patriots need to figure out a way to lock up Trey Flowers. Trent Brown is going to be a free agent. Left tackle on this year's team was fantastic. You're going to need someone to protect the blind side because Brady, he's not getting any younger. So the Patriots offensive line, they were a huge part in their postseason success. Brady got sacked one time over the course of 3 games. Outside wide receivers, I don't think it matters. Brady's done wonders with a bunch of no-namers, but Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett, they're all going to enter free agency. Hogan was up and down, really never seemed to get on the same page with Brady. I thought that was a little bit deflating this year, especially for those who play fantasy. In a PPR league with Danny Amendola going out the door, you thought for sure, right, that Chris Hogan was going to have a fantastic year. It doesn't matter. Josh Gordon, Michael Floyd, I'm just throwing names out that we have seen in the past. Julian Edelman played quarterback in college, for those who don't remember, at Kent State, and he's a Super Bowl MVP, and he's like 5'10". Doesn't matter who Brady has on the outside, the Pats will find a way to make it work. So the biggest questions for this team heading into the offseason. Trey Flowers, to me, it's number one. He's going to get paid. He's only 25 years old. Pass rush is huge in the NFL, and the offensive line, because Brady's not getting any younger. If you answer those questions, there's no reason to believe that this Patriot dynasty is going to come to an end. And I will say, a year to the day, I was wrong. I said it was over following the loss to Philadelphia. I was wrong, and I will never pick against the New England Patriots again. I'm saying it. I will never pick against the Patriots in the Super Bowl again. Never. I've done it twice, I think. 2 or 3 times I've done it. That's it. I'm never going to do it again. Never. This dynasty is going to continue as long as Bill Belichick is there and the Patriots can continue as an organization to fill in puzzle pieces. Those are the offseason questions, though, for the New England Patriots. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we'll flip to the Los Angeles Rams side. The Rams copycat league tried to follow suit of the Philadelphia Eagles. They went all in. Is their Super Bowl window closed? We'll talk about that when we return.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports. Continuing our recap of Super Bowl 53. Talk New England Patriots last segment. We'll talk Los Angeles Rams this segment. Look, I think they had the best roster in the NFL. I think that's why they got to the Super Bowl. I think they were badly outcoached. And I'll tell you one of the things that I loved last night. Sean McVay was the first to say he was outcoached by Bill Belichick. He flat out said it. He took accountability for it. And this is why Sean McVay is so likable. This is why he is a player's coach. He is more than willing to take the scrutiny for shortcomings. Never puts it on his players. Never puts it on anyone but himself. That's the biggest difference between Sean Payton and Sean McVay. It's the point I was trying to make last week with Sean Payton, who still won't let the NFC Championship go. I thought that Sean McVay was taken to school last night by Bill Belichick. He was taken to school last night by Brian Flores. The Rams' offense was one-dimensional, predictable, and they looked lost at times last night. A lot of it has to do with Todd Gurley, and I do believe that eventually it'll come out as to why Todd Gurley was not used in the NFC Championship and why he was not used in the Super Bowl, wasn't used properly. I refuse to believe that he is healthy. He did not play the last 2 weeks of the regular season. The Rams were very hush-hush about it. They let go of a Pro Bowl returner in Farrell Cooper in order to bring in C.J. Anderson, who I thought performed well. But Gurley wasn't Gurley. And at some point, I think we will learn as to why. Why? What happened? What changed? We're talking about a guy that was the MVP 12 weeks into the season. And he wasn't used properly in the NFC Championship if he was healthy, and he wasn't used properly in the Super Bowl if he was healthy. And that's an indictment on Sean McVay, but I refuse to believe that Todd Gurley's healthy, at least for the time being. I think more will come out on it. I think there's some problems with that surgically repaired knee. Remember, he hurt that and he tore that ACL in the same knee that's been bothering him when he was in Georgia. That's why Gurley lasted 10 picks into the draft. The Rams missed Cooper Kupp. I don't think the offense ever looked nearly as comfortable. Jared Goff didn't look as comfortable without Cooper Kupp on the field. When Kupp tore his ACL, Kupp was out for the majority of the season. But when it was the season-ending injury that he suffered against Seattle, you knew the Rams were going to be searching for a safety blanket. They could have used Cooper Kupp last night, there's no question. But still, the Patriots forced the Rams to become one-dimensional. And Jared Goff, for as great as he had been at times this season, he also had some very low points. I mentioned the Chicago Bears game. I mentioned the Detroit Lions game. There were times this year where Goff did not look great. Goff had several opportunities last night. A lot of talk about Brandon Cooks essentially dropping two touchdown passes. The one hit him in the hands. It was knocked away. I get it. If Goff throws that ball on a dime, it's a touchdown. Too much air under the ball. Didn't see him. There was talk about a hold called against the Rams, which really halted what I thought was a solid offensive drive. Game's 3-3. There's about 10 minutes to play in the game. Rams have the ball around near midfield. Todd Gurley has a 10-yard run. It's called back on a holding on John Sullivan, the center. The following play, it's 2nd and 22. The following play, Goff has Josh Reynolds wide open across the center of the field, and he didn't even see him. That's a problem. The Jared Goff, I don't think he played terribly. I think there were some positives for Goff. It has more to do with what the Patriots did defensively than what Goff didn't do, but there were times where he missed his reads. Patriots got to the Rams last night. It's that simple. Looking at what the Rams have this next offseason, ESPN projects them to be the number one team in the NFL, and that could very easily be the case. But Les Snead has his work cut out for him. And this is why. The Rams have key pieces shored up. Todd Gurley is signed long-term. Aaron Donald is signed long-term. Brandon Cooks is signed long-term. But you're going to have to pay Sean McVay. You're going to have to pay him a lot of money. John Gruden got $100 million over 10 years. Stan Kroenke would be smart to lock up Sean McVay immediately. The USA Today ran a story on this. And if you don't lock him up immediately, you're foolish. Because this is a team that was 4-12 2 years ago. They go to 11-5 last season. 13-3 this year in a Super Bowl trip. Lock him up long term. I don't worry about the Rams offensively nearly as much as I do on the defensive side of the ball because McVay's an offensive-minded guy. But the Rams' offensive line has been fantastic over the last 2 years, and a lot of it has to do with Andrew Whitworth. He's 37 years old. I think he comes back next year, but I think it's a $15 million cap hit. He's going to have to rework that contract, or he may be a cap casualty if he comes back at all. John Sullivan, there was talks of him retiring last year. He's 33. He's been around for a little while. He's a Sean McVay guy. He came over from Washington with McVay. That's a McVay guy. Roger Saffold, longest tenured player on the team. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to get a payday. He's not coming back. Rams are going to lose Roger Saffold. They did draft Joseph Noteboom. He was prepped a little bit, played well, I thought, in the Cowboy game in the divisional round. They have Brian Allen as well, a young guy. I mean, they have young guys that they can bring up, but they're going to lose some experience on that offensive line. Like I said, I don't worry about that nearly as much. Defensively is where the Rams are going to have their work cut out for them this offseason. And for me, it's all free agency. I'm not necessarily talking about retirement. The Rams went all in this year. They moved a third-round pick to bring in Dante Fowler. I thought Fowler worked out for the most part. He needs to be used at outside linebacker, and the Rams are going to have a need there. But he's a free agent. Are you going to pay this guy? He's not on a rookie contract anymore. And Ndamukong Suh, he was a one-year rental. Would Suh take a pay cut to come back to L.A.? I don't think so. I think he's gone. And so the Rams are probably going to have to cash in on the idea that Jared Goff is under the rookie contract for one more season. That's the key to winning in the NFL if you're not the New England Patriots. If you have a quarterback on a rookie scale contract, you can win in this league. Following next season, Jared Goff is going to get paid. Donald is going to be locked up. Goff is going to be locked up. Gurley is going to be locked up along with Brandon Cooks. The Rams are going to have next to no flexibility. Better start thinking about this right now. Good news for the Rams, the salary cap's going to go up $10 million next season. The NFL is handing each team $10 million. That helps the Rams, and that does improve the idea of bringing back Ndamukong Suh. But to me, Suh is the most important guy here. Aaron Donald led the league in sacks this last season, set the record for most sacks by an interior lineman. Ndamukong Suh's statistics may not be eye-popping, but Aaron Donald receives double teams more than any other defensive lineman in the league. And the way Suh played, you're going to free Aaron Donald a little bit more. The Rams need help on the defensive front. They need help on the outside. The secondary is going to be a different story. Aqib Talib was great this year, but he and Marcus Peters, they account for something like $19, $18 million against the cap next season. They could release both of those guys. Talib was great, a little bit older. He is a Wade Phillips guy. I could see Talib hanging around. Marcus Peters, he struggled, especially when Talib was out. LaMarcus Joyner had the franchise tag on him this season. He's not coming back. I thought his play dipped just a tad bit. John Johnson is coming back next season. And then Nickell Robey-Coleman will be back next season as well. The Rams, for me, defensively, there's a lot of question marks going into the offseason. I like the Rams to contend for an NFC championship next year because core pieces are going to be back, and I'm not really worried about the offense, but they have got to figure something out defensively, and I'm curious to see how Les Snead does it this year. The Rams have been aggressive, and that's the way they needed to do it in L.A. It's a copycat league. They tried to copy the Philadelphia Eagles. It worked for the most part. They got to the Super Bowl, but now let's see what they do in the offseason because, like I said, there's a lot of pieces that they have to account for. We've got a break for another moment. We'll return and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... Say it again. Buscarini. All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, Missouri right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav.
Yeah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
That's the name of the game. That's the name of the game.
Back to close out this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. And we'll have plenty more football to talk about on the show tomorrow. Just because the NFL season's done doesn't mean the football talk's over. The NFL draft's not that far off. Free agency's going to pick up before we know it. But again, congratulations to the New England Patriots on winning Super Bowl 53. The dynasty, it just continues. And I don't know if it's ever going to stop, as we talked about earlier on in the show today. Again, we'll talk more NFL football tomorrow. Plus, it's the final week of the regular season for high school basketball. And the season for both wrestling and swimming, it will come to an end this weekend. So we have a lot of local sports to get into over the next couple of days. We'll go down that avenue tomorrow right here on Drive Time Sports. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. We will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.